Lecture 15, Northwestern University, Materials Science and Engineering 405, Physics of Solids, Professor Mark Hersham, Friday, October the 13th, 2006.
Okay, let's get started. Today we're going to finish off perturbation theory, and that'll be the final topic for the homework and the exam. On Monday and Tuesday, we'll review for the exam, and then Wednesday and Thursday, we'll have the exam in class, and Friday we will go over the exam in class. So next week is an exam week in the truest sense of the word. But before we get to that, we have finished perturbation theory. So let me remind you of where we left off last time. There are many flavors of perturbation theory. The one which we are talking about is non-degenerate time independent perturbation theory. So obviously this will apply to time-independent potentials and those which lack degeneracy in the stationary states. This approach is going to allow us to find corrections to the stationary state energies and wave functions, not only for the ground state but excited states as well, assuming that we know the solution to the unperturbed potential. And so the idea is, assume we know the unperturbed solutions. The unperturbed solutions will be the solution to the following equation, the Schrodinger equation for the unperturbed Hamiltonian. Of course, if that operated on the stationary state solution, you'd get out the stationary state energy times the stationary state solution. So this is known. Now we perturb the potential, and therefore the Hamiltonian. And we're going to perturb it slightly. Obviously, the quality of this approach assumes that the perturbation is small, that the perturbation is comparable to or larger than the potential itself. And this approach will give you an answer, but it's not going to be particularly accurate. So we're assuming that it's a small perturbation, i.e., the real Hamiltonian is the unperturbed Hamiltonian plus the perturbation. And I'm just going to have a parameter, lambda, which keeps track of the order of the correction we're making. So we're going to do a power series expansion with respect to lambda. We'll set lambda equal to 1 at the end. The only way that that works is if h prime is small. And that was a question that was asked in office hours. Yeah?
In the book, Griffith says that for the moment we'll take lambda to be a small number. Why is that necessary?
I don't know why he says that. I would say let h prime be small. It's easier to think about it that way because it's obvious if lambda is small, why you only keep the first order terms for first order perturbation theory and the second order terms for second order perturbation theory. So you can take lambda to be anything you want in principle. And it's easier conceptually perhaps if you assume it's small. But then it's hard to accept later why you turn it back up to 1. So it all depends on your perspective. I think it's easier, personally I think it's easier to assume that h prime is small, which is what we're assuming. Then it makes sense you'd only keep the first order or second order correction. This is the setup. What we then do is we will write the real solution for the real Hamiltonian capital H. The real solution will be psi sub n and E sub n as power series in lambda. So psi sub n equals psi n naught plus lambda psi n 1, the first order correction, plus lambda squared psi n 2. And of course, you could do this for as many orders as you want. If h prime really is small, then it's going to make sense to only keep 1 or maybe 2 orders. E sub n is equal to E n naught plus lambda en1 plus lambda squared en2. And of course, you could keep higher order terms if you were interested. And what we're going to do is plug these power series expanded forms of psi n and en into the real Schrodinger equation, which of course is h psi sub n equals e sub n psi sub n. So we're going to plug this, that, and that into the real Schrodinger equation. And then we're going to collect terms of order lambda to the 0th power, lambda to the 1st power, lambda to the 2nd power. And last time I wrote that all out on the board, I'm just going to write down the collected terms. So the terms of order lambda to the 0th power, there's just one term that's present on each side of the Schrodinger equation. On the left-hand side, you have h naught psi n naught equals en naught psi n naught. Of course, we better get that to 0th order. The solution should be the unperturbed solution, and that is, in fact, what we get. So we already knew this. We'll then collect terms of order lambda to the first. On the left-hand side, we're going to have two terms that survive, h naught psi n1 plus h prime psi n0 is equal to en1 psi n0 plus en0 psi n1. And if it's not obvious, you could just go ahead and plug everything in here, multiply it out, and you'd find that these are the only terms which are multiplied by lambda. We can do terms of order lambda squared. We do terms of lambda squared. Now you get out five terms, h naught psi n2 plus h prime psi n1 is equal to en naught psi n2 plus en1 psi n1 plus en2 psi n0. And of course, if you wanted to do third or fourth or nth order perturbation theory, you just collect the terms of lambda to the third, lambda to the fourth, or lambda to the nth power. And you can do this indefinitely. And of course, the exact solution would be carrying this out to infinite order. If h prime is small, though, a small perturbation, then in most cases, lambda to the first order perturbation theory is sufficient. Unless, of course, you find that the first order correction is zero, then obviously all you've gotten back is the original, so you'd at least have to go to second order. And in the homework problem, that's the case. You find the first order perturbation correction is zero, so you have no choice but to go to second order to get any correction. And that leads to the van der Waals 1 over r to the 6th dependence. If you've done the homework, you'll know that. If you haven't, you'll see that. So we know this to be true. It's not obvious yet that this is useful. So we're going to now try to manipulate these equations into a more useful form. So we'll first do first order theory. So this is first order non-degenerate time-independent perturbation theory. So let's do first order. And the approach is to take the inner product of our equation, which we got from order lambda to the first, with the stationary state unperturbed wave function psi n naught. Okay, so we're just going to take this equation, which we just derived for lambda to the first, take the inner product with psi n naught. And what you'll get out is the inner product of psi n naught with h naught operating on psi n1. That's the first term. Plus the inner product of psi n naught times h prime operating on psi n naught. This will be equal to en prime times the inner product of psi n naught with itself. Of course, we can pull this out in front because this is just a constant. Plus en naught times psi n naught, or the inner product of psi n naught with psi n1 first thing we recognize is that normalization tells us that this term is equal to 1. So that's one simplification that occurs. There's one other trick we need, and this is one of those few times we have to go back to matrix mechanics, which we did not cover. It's in chapter 3. So just going to take my word for it. Or in linear algebra, then you would have derived this in a linear algebra class. But since the unperturbed Hamiltonian is Hermitian, and like I said, if you don't know what Hermitian means, don't worry about it. It's a term from linear algebra. But it is Hermitian, and because it's Hermitian, then we can manipulate this term in the following way. In particular, the inner product of psi naught times h naught operating on psi n 1, because h naught is Hermitian, we can reverse the order of these two terms. Okay. And as a result, it becomes h naught operating on psi n naught inner product with psi n 1. And this is very powerful because we know that h naught operating on psi n naught is just e n naught times psi n naught, so we can pull that out in front. Because e n naught is a constant. So this is just equal to e n naught times psi n naught inner product with psi n 1. And why this is powerful is that we see that this term, which would now go here, also exists on the right-hand side of the equation, so they cancel. And as a result, we now see that the first order correction, which is what we want, is simply equal to psi n naught inner product of h prime operating on psi n naught, i.e., the first order correction is the expectation value of the perturbation, because h prime is the perturbation. But it's the expectation value of the perturbation in the unperturbed state, because these two terms here are the unperturbed wave functions. And so this is absolutely beautiful, because we know what the unperturbed wave functions are. We know what the perturbation is. We have to do one integral to get out the first order correction. Absolutely trivial and easy to implement. And it works for all of the energies, not just the ground state. Of course, the real now energy will be En naught, which is the unperturbed energy, plus En1. So this is just the correction. It's not the answer itself. You have to add this to En naught. All right. Okay, so let's practice. For example, consider the following potential. This potential will have the following shape to it. This is V, and this is X. This would be a value of V naught. This would be a value of X, A over 2, and A. And so it's the perturbed infinite potential well in 1D, where we have a step going halfway across it. Now, in principle, we could solve this exactly, but it would be a mess because we have to apply boundary conditions at three locations. With perturbation theory, we can very quickly find the first order correction to the known wave function and known energy. We already know the energy, so the infinite potential well. You can find the first order correction just by doing one integral. So let's go ahead and try that. So the perturbation is just equal to V naught between 0 and A over 2, and it's 0 otherwise. In addition, we know from week 2 of this class that the unperturbed wave functions for the infinite potential well in 1D is just square root 2 over A sine n pi x over a. And as a result, we simply use what we've derived here to find the first order correction. So the first order correction will just be equal to the inner product of the unperturbed wave functions with the perturbed Hamiltonian, which will be equal to 2 v naught over a, integral 0 to a over 2, Of course, in general, we integrate over all space, but the perturbed Hamiltonian is only non-zero between 0 and a over 2, so that limits the bounds of our integral. Times sine squared, n pi x over a, which is, of course, sine not magnitude squared, dx. We've solved this integral many times in this course. Let me just write down the result. The integral is just going to be a over 4 multiplied by the coefficient 2v0 over a. And what we see is that the first order correction to the stationary state energies for this potential is just v0 over 2. In other words, every single energy in the infinite potential well is raised by v0 over 2. If you're just to eyeball this, that's probably what you'd expect. Of course, if this were v0 across the entire length of the box, then everything would be lifted up by v0. So to first order, if you just do it over half the box, you probably lift it up by v0 over 2. That's what we find to first order. Okay? Everybody comfortable with this? Pretty easy to use. Just do an integral. Now, I told you that perturbation theory would not only tell us the corrections to the energies, but also the wave functions. So we have to go back and address that issue. And in particular, we have no choice but to do this in order to implement second-order perturbation theory, which I'm now erasing. But if you look in your notes, you'll see that in the second-order equation, psi n1 is present. So we need to know psi n1 before we can find the second-order correction. So we're going to play more with these equations and come up with a correction not only to the energy but also the stationary state wave functions. Okay. To do that, let's rewrite the equation of order lambda to the first. So I'm going to write it in the following way. I'm just going to arrange terms. H0 minus EN0 operating on psi n1 is equal to negative H prime minus EN1 operating on psi n0. So all I've done is rewrite the lambda to the first order equation. Then what I'm going to remind you of is that any stationary state solution to the Schrodinger equation is a complete set of functions. So since psi and naught are complete, we can express any function, and in particular, psi n1 as a power series in psi and naught. So we can write psi n1, it would be equal to a sum over some coefficients C sub m. And of course, there'll be a different set of these coefficients for each value of n. So I'm going to have superscript n to keep track of the coefficients for a particular value of n. Times psi m naught. And as well, we could plug this back into this equation. But what I want you to recognize is that the right-hand side of this equation has already psi n naught. And so summing over all values of m, including n, would be redundant. And as a result, we only need to sum over the values of m not equal to n. That's a subtle point. Is everybody comfortable with that? It's a redundant term if we included it. We could just fold it into this term over here. And so we're going to eliminate the redundancy. This is quite useful for us, the fact that we do not have to include n equals to n. We're going to use this many times, so it's important that you accept this point. Okay. If you accept this point, now we can simply plug in the new expression for psi sub n1 into this equation. So let's do that. This equation will become sum over m not equal to n of E sub m0. It's E sub m0 because we're having h0 operating on psi sub m0, but this is just a stationary state wave function of h0, and so as a result, it's equal to em0 times psi m0. Minus EN naught times psi N1, which is C sub M superscript N psi N naught. This is just equal to the right-hand side, which remains unchanged, H prime minus En1 cyan naught. Okay? Everybody comfortable? Now, what we do, like I've said from the early days of this course, whenever you get stuck, what you want to do is take the inner product with an orthonormal function. So we'll do that. Take the inner product with psi sub L naught. So let's do that. The left-hand side will remain a sum over all m not equal to n. Em naught minus En naught. These are constants. We can pull them out in front of the inner product. C sub m is similarly a constant. It can be pulled out in front of the inner product. And the inner product will just become an inner product of psi sub L naught, psi sub m naught. This will be equal to the left-hand side, which will now be negative inner product of psi sub L naught times h prime operating on psi sub n naught plus e sub n1 times psi sub L naught inner product with psi sub n naught. And again, because e sub n1 is a constant, we can pull it out in front of the inner product. Now, let's take a look at this. L could be any value in principle, so there's two important cases. The first case is if L equals n. If L equals n, then if we look at this term here, what you'll see is that this is going to be inner product of psi sub n naught times psi sub m naught. N can be any value except n. And this inner product is zero except when m equals n. Since we're not including the m equals n term, this whole left-hand side becomes zero. And as a result, when L equals n, this will become 1, and we see that En1 will be equal to psi sub n naught h prime psi sub n naught, which is just the first order energy correction term that we already derived. So if L equals n, we recover the first order energy correction. So this doesn't tell us anything we don't already know, but it at least confirms what we already know. So it's consistent. The more interesting case is if L does not equal n. If L does not equal n, then when we take and sum over all the values of m, the only term which is non-zero is when m equals L. And so this is a sampling function, as we've done many times now in this course. And as we reduce the infinite sum into one term, on the left-hand side, all that survives is e sub L naught minus e sub n naught times c sub L superscript n. Furthermore, if L does not equal n, we know that this is zero because these functions are orthonormal. And so the only term that survives on the right-hand side will be equal to negative psi sub L naught inner product with h prime operating on psi sub n naught. And so, as I've said many times in this course, when we take the inner product, we can sample the function, this infinite sum, if you will, and dramatically reduce the complexity of the equation. That's what we've done. Now, of course, we could cycle L through all values of m, and as a result, this represents an equation for all values of c sub m. And that's what we want. Once we know the values of c sub m, we're done, because then we can express psi sub n1 in terms of those c sub m terms. So we're done at this point. To summarize, let's just replace L with m and move this to the right-hand side of the equation. This implies that c sub m superscript n is equal to psi sub m naught inner product with h prime operating on psi sub n naught divided by e sub n naught minus e sub m naught. And as a result, since psi sub n 1 is just a power series with the c sub m coefficients, we now know what the first order corrections to the wave function are. They're equal to a sum over m not equal to n psi sub m naught inner product with h prime operating on psi sub n naught divided by e sub n naught minus e sub m naught times psi sub m not. And so we know everything. We know all of the unperturbed stationary state energies. We know all the unperturbed stationary state wave functions. We know the perturbed Hamiltonian. All I have to do is execute this infinite sum, where the sum is a sum over integrals, in this case, and you're done. So you can write it very concisely in practice, depending upon how many terms you really have to keep in the sum. It's, you know, a large number of integrals, potentially. But this is a very concise statement. And therefore, we've achieved our objective, which is to find the first order corrections to the stationary state wave functions. Now that we know this, we can determine second order perturbation theory. One thing that you'll notice here is that this equation works perfectly fine unless you have degeneracy. If you have degeneracy, then you can have two distinct quantum states with the same energy, and as a result, this denominator will become zero, and you'll have a singularity. There's clearly a problem here. And so you can see the difference between non-degenerate and degenerate perturbation theory is how you deal with this denominator. In non-degenerate perturbation theory, there's no problem, so you're done. In degenerate perturbation theory, this is a problem because it appears that you're going to get some singularity in the perturbation. But we know the perturbation should be small compared to the real wave function, so there's a problem here. The reality, though, is that as soon as you perturb the Hamiltonian, you will split the degeneracy. And so degenerate perturbation theory just addresses that point, how the perturbation splits the degeneracy. And that's how you would move forward. And if you are interested, just read chapter 6.2 of Griffiths, and he'll tell you all about it. Okay. Due to limited time, we're not going to do it in class, but I hope at least you can see the issue with the degenerate state and also accept that the perturbation to the Hamiltonian will split the degeneracy. And as a result, this problem can be addressed. And as a result, for example, in the hydrogen atom, if you include relativistic effects, so instead of just writing the kinetic energy as 1/2 mv squared, but you include the first order relativistic correction to the kinetic energy, you can employ first order perturbation theory to find that there's a splitting of the degeneracy in the n equals 1, n equals 2, n equals 3 states in the hydrogen atom. And that will lead to fine structures. This is known as the fine structure of hydrogen. It results from relativistic effects, which can be dealt with relatively simply using perturbation theory. So if you're interested, you could read about that as well. Certainly, if you're a chemist, you'd be probably quite interested in that theory. Okay. Any questions on first-order perturbation theory before we move on? Okay. Second order theory. We'll do the exact same thing we did before, except now we'll take the inner product of our order lambda squared equation with psi n naught. So it's the exact same approach, except now we're going to use the second order equation. And remember, the second order equation had five terms. So we'll get five terms when we take the inner product. The first term is psi n naught, inner product with h naught operating on psi n 2, plus psi n naught, inner product with h prime operating on psi n 1. This will be equal to, on the right-hand side, all we have are e sub n terms. And so these are constants that come out in front of the inner products. So we have e n naught times the inner product of psi n naught with psi n 2 plus en 1 times the inner product of psi n naught with psi n 1 plus en 2 times the inner product of psi n naught with itself. And of course, this is just equal to 1, so we have one simplification immediately. Again, what we'll do is exploit the hermeticity of the unperturbed Hamiltonian. And as a result, We can reverse the order in this first term here. In particular, psi n naught inner product with h naught operating on psi n 2 is equal to h naught operating on psi n naught inner product with psi n 2. But we know from the unperturbed Schrodinger equation that this is just equal to En naught times the inner product of psi n naught with psi n 2. And again, we see that this term exists now on the left-hand side and the right-hand side of this equation, so we get cancellation. Okay? And as a result, we have En2. We can move everything else to the left-hand side of the equation. So En2 is equal to psi n naught h prime psi n1 minus En1 times the inner product of psi n naught and psi n1. Since we have an expression for psi n1, we can explicitly evaluate this inner product. But psi n naught inner product with psi n1 is equal to sum over m not equal to n, c sub m, superscript n. This is a constant and come out in front of the inner product. And the inner product is now psi sub n naught with psi sub m naught. But we see that m can have any value except equal to n. And as a result, all these terms are orthogonal. And this is just equal to 0. And so you can see that the unperturbed wave functions and the first order corrected wave functions are orthonormal. And as a result, we see that En2 is simply equal to one term, which is psi n naught h prime psi n1. But we know what psi n1 is, so we can plug it in to this equation. This will be equal to a sum over m not equal to n, c sub m superscript n, psi n naught h prime psi sub m naught. But we know what the c sub m terms are. We already derived that, so we can plug that in. And if you look at the c sub m terms, you'll see that they have the form c sub m naught h prime psi n naught, whereas here we have psi sub n naught h prime psi m naught. So these two are complex conjugates of one another, right? Because this just represents an integral of psi n naught complex conjugate h prime psi m naught, whereas that one will be psi m naught complex conjugate h prime psi n naught. So if you took the complex conjugate of those two, they would be equal to one another. And as a result, we can write this as the sum m not equal to n of psi sub m naught h prime psi sub n naught divided by e sub n naught minus e sub m naught, which is just the c sub m term we derived before, times psi sub n naught h prime psi sub m naught. But because these two are complex conjugates of one another, when you multiply a number by its complex conjugate, you just get the magnitude squared of that complex number. And as a result, we can succinctly write that E sub n 2, the second order correction to the energies, is a sum m not equal to n of the magnitude of the inner product of psi sub m naught with h prime operating on psi sub n naught magnitude squared divided by E sub n naught minus E sub m naught. This will be the second order correction. And again, we know everything. We know all the stationary state energies. We know all the stationary state wave functions and the perturbation to the Hamiltonian. So all we have to do is execute this integral, take the magnitude squared, and then implement this infinite sum. And that's exactly what you will do in the homework. What I encourage you to look for is it really necessary to evaluate all of the terms in the sum, or are some of them going to be zero? And you'll find that in the homework, all but one will be zero. And so it boils down to doing one integral. So it's a relatively easy problem that I gave you. Are there any questions on second order perturbation theory? That's all there is to it. We could do this sort of forever if we wanted. We could utilize second order energies, rewrite the order lambda squared term, and then solve for psi sub n2. Once you know psi sub n2, you could go to the order lambda the third term, determine third order perturbation theory, fourth order, fifth order, etc. You'll find that in practice, for example, if you take 451 and you study the magnetic properties of materials, even the simplest theory of magnetism requires second order perturbation theory. And the reason is that the magnetic susceptibility is the second derivative of the correction to the Hamiltonian with respect to magnetic field. And so the first order term will just give you the dependence of the correction of the Hamiltonian to order magnetic field to the first power. You take the second derivative of that, it's of course zero. So if you use first order perturbation theory, you conclude there is no such thing as a magnetic material, which of course is not the case. And so you have to go to second order perturbation theory, and you get a term which goes as h squared. And from that, you can calculate the magnetic susceptibility of whatever your favorite material is, iron or cobalt, etc. What I should point out, though, is that that's, of course, a zeroth order, if you will, calculation of the magnetic susceptibility. If you wanted to determine the first order correction of the magnetic susceptibility, you'd have to use third order perturbation theory in the original Hamiltonian in order to get out that first order correction. And you can imagine doing this indefinitely. And 451 will just do the zeroth order correction and use second order perturbation theory. Also, as I mentioned last time, there are more sophisticated forms of perturbation theory, including degenerate perturbation theory, where you deal with this degeneracy problem we've acknowledged. We won't cover that in class, but you may want to read about it. And then finally, time-dependent perturbation theory, both non-degenerate and degenerate, which will allow you to deal with time-dependent potentials. And in material science, really the only important time-dependent problem is that of the interaction of light with matter. If you want to understand absorption of light, or fluorescence, that is spontaneous emission of light, or even more fun, stimulated emission of radiation, then you have to use time-dependent perturbation theory. And so in 451, we will address that issue as it becomes relevant to you. If you don't take 451, then you can read about it if you care, or just care not to understand stimulated emission. That's, of course, your prerogative. But stimulated emission, of course, is the basis of any laser. A laser is just an acronym which stands for light amplification by stimulated emission of radiation. So it's quite important technologically. Okay, that's all I have before the first exam. Are there any last questions? Okay, if not, you're free to go early, and I'll see you on Monday for review.
MSE 405.